Systems have rules. I joke sometimes and say the rules of systems are kind of like the rules of gravity. I can disavow the rules of gravity. I can get on a two-story, three-story building and jump off and just ignore the rules of gravity, but I won't break those rules. They'll break me.
Hey, Aspen. This is Jim and Tricia, and we are back to keep talking about systems theory with you. And basically, today, to continue the conversation that we started in the webinar, basically to say that we want to talk about systems and how they work and the fact that they have rules and that playing by the rules improves our performance and our results and just makes life a little, easier, more bearable.
And, you know, what I want to say about that is that sometimes when we talk about systems theory, people think that's some academic, esoteric thing that, you know, only people in ivory towers do. But what's actually true is that for the first 4 or 5 or 6 years of your life, almost all you did was systems thinking. You were intuitive, you saw the whole, and it was when you went to school that kind of got schooled out of you and you learned to take the whole and break it down to its parts and do linear thinking. And it's not that linear thinking is wrong and systems thinking is right, but this is a way of thinking that human beings have done for ages, and because we've been educated to the more mechanistic, linear way of thinking, it's just a way of recapturing something that we all know how to do. And the more you work at it, the more you realize you do it intuitively.
And so just to remind us, basically, systems thinking just says that we are all connected, that there are not only the parts, like you just mentioned, but the connections between the parts, and that we are all contributing to whatever reality is.
Yep. And so in our last in our webinar, we introduced three rules. And that's the language we're losing. Systems have rules. And it's kind of like, I joke sometimes and say, it's kind of like the rules of systems are kind of like the rules of gravity. I can disavow the rules of gravity. I can get on a two-story, three-story building and jump off and just ignore the rules of gravity, but I won't break those rules. They'll break me. As we begin today, we want to first start by going back and just reviewing quickly, reminding you of the three systems principles or systems rules that we talked about last time. The first one was today's problems come from yesterday's solutions.
There's just a part of that that feels really unfair, you know, that we solved a problem and now our problems come from our solutions to the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those things maybe we resist and we make things harder for ourselves by resisting it. But just accepting that just because a problem is solved doesn't mean it stays solved. What do you want to say about that?
Well, and the thing I would say about that is that often today's problems comes from yesterday's solutions, because yesterday's solutions were not systemic solutions. And so we solved a problem, but we didn't deal with the underlying contributing factors. Mm-hmm. And so that problem goes away, but the underlying factors are there. So kind of like a game of whack-a-mole, it comes up somewhere else, right? Because those underlying conditions are still there.
Oh, that's great. Yes. And even if we did have systemic solutions, systems
right.
change.
And right,
we
exactly.
take that. You know, we want our problems to stay solved. And so that's one thing to pay attention to with that rule. And then the other thing that comes up for me is just that this speaks to the fact that there are just always unintended consequences to things.
Right.
And that
right.
that's okay. I think there's such a tendency to think about, well, what is the right way to solve this problem? Rather than saying, well, every solution is going to have advantages and disadvantages. And how will we take advantage of the advantages that we want and mitigate the disadvantages that we don't want, rather than looking for one single perfect solution? I think one of the reasons we get into conflict is that we have different ideas about what the perfect solution is, rather than the ability to say all of our potential solutions have pluses and minuses, and how can we look at that and think that through together?
I was coaching one of my Aspen clients yesterday, or day before yesterday, and we were talking about that very thing. And one of the things that I said to him was, you know, if you could just cultivate in your own inner life that when unintended consequences come up, there's nothing wrong here. Nobody, you know, there's nobody to blame. There's nobody to, like, we did something wrong or we wouldn't have these unintended consequences. That is just the nature of living in a rapidly changing world, and it's the nature of how systems work. One of my friends says life is this increasingly complex series of problems to solve. And when we're faced with problems and we make that like something's wrong here, that just creates a context that's different than, yeah, this is the next thing for us to address. So all of that's the first. Today's problems come from yesterday's solutions. The second thing that we talked about on the webinar last time is there's no blame, but there is accountability. And I just laugh every time I read this, because the first time I read that, it was like, that is not true. This invalidates system theory for me, because that is not true. I had been taught all of my life that what good leaders do is that they scan the horizon, they find the problem, they fix the problem, and it was all about blame, and learning that everybody's contributing to whatever the challenge that you're dealing with, to whatever that is, and being accountable for yourself and what you're contributing to that by what you're saying or not saying, what you're doing or not doing, or by the way you're saying what you say, all of those things, that took a while to get rooted out of me. There's a deep, mm-hmm. I don't know, a deep need, I think, to blame somebody when something's not going right.
I think after we did the webinar, I had several conversations with Aspen people saying, well, now wait, how does this work that there is no blame? But we also had a pretty vigorous conversation in our own team about just needing to remind ourselves of what that means, how that looks, you know, on a practical basis, that there is no blame, but that there is accountability and that those are not the same thing.
Right.
So one thing that makes the distinction for me is that when there's accountability, we're assuming everyone contributed to whatever the reality is now. We assume that everyone's going to contribute to the solution. And we just have this sense of we, instead of looking for who the they is that, you know, has made life hard for us. Yep. Everybody is we. We are all we. And so, right after the webinar, one thing that happened was a lot of my clients wanted to talk about, okay, explain to me again how there's no blame. But also, I was drawn into a conversation with a group of people who have had kind of some longstanding misunderstanding. It turned out I hardly needed to say anything in the meeting because they did a beautiful job. But their goal was to say, okay, we have this longstanding thing. We need to have a conversation that's focused on solutions and accountability and not on blame. And they did a beautiful job of that. And I just thought, and spent a lot of time looking rather than at who did something wrong, looking at how do our processes keep getting us in this same place.
Yeah. And as you tell that story, it reminds me that the way that I learned to step away from blame, away from the they to the we, in the early stages was with some facilitators who helped us slow down, who helped us interrupt our automatic pattern, my automatic pattern of wanting to blame somebody, to foster communication. And with two or three experiences like that, I began to see the power of the we rather than the they. And it began to make a real difference in the way that I approached life and the solutions that I found to really complex problems that I was working on in the organization that I was a part of. So if the first thing we talked about last time was today's problems comes from yesterday's solutions, the second one, there is no blame, but there is accountability. The third one is that there are, on the webinar, was that there is always leverage. What would you say about that?
I think that's connected to another rule of systems, that every change changes everything. So if we change anything, we're going to change to some degree everything. One of our problems is that we either resist change right? We want other people to change, or we want things to change, but we don't want to change. Or we're focused on changing, and this is related, everyone else, and not realizing mm-hmm. that our leverage, our greatest leverage is changing ourselves. But also thinking about what kinds of changes. A lot of times, you know, we change things, but we don't actually change anything. You know, if does that make sense? I mean, I know that sounds kind of counterintuitive, but we make a change that isn't actually a change.
Yeah. I mean, the way that I say that is we make a change that has the same that is a solution to the underlying causes without addressing the underlying causes. And so then the underlying causes are still there, and we've made a change, but we're still getting the same results.
The change was so superficial.
Right.
Which is not the same thing as small, right? Like small changes that do address those underlying issues can be so powerful. But so we're not necessarily saying that you have to rearrange everything to get change, but the changes have to be targeted, and it can't just be rearranging the symptoms.
Yep.
You know, addressing the symptoms and rearranging that. But the idea that there's always leverage, and that my best leverage starts with me, led us in the webinar to the magic question, given that this is reality. Okay, so I'm not going to fight reality, but mm-hmm. given that this is my reality, at least today, how do I want to show up? And what will I do to show up that way?
I want to say one more thing about that. That's such a powerful question. And you said at the very beginning of this piece around leverage that there's always leverage, and that the highest leverage is changing the way you show up in the system. The second highest piece of leverage is changing the interaction of the parts. And so what happens is we get in our silo, and in our silo, we make decisions that are going to impact other people because every change changes everything. But we do that without consulting with them, without informing them, without seeing what the impact is going to be on them. And so the more you can strengthen the connections between the parts, between a studio and the OLG, or between the ELT and the studios, between the superintendents and the studios, I mean, all of those parts, and those are just a few of the parts, all of those parts, any change changes everything. And so the more you can strengthen the relationships between the parts, and the more that you can be in communication when a decision in one place is going to impact another part of the system, to really thoughtfully and respectfully think about and listen to what the impact of those kinds of actions or decisions are going to have on others that are in the system.
So those are three rules of systems thinking that we put out there in the webinar. And you can go back and listen to the webinar. And we said a lot more things about those rules. But we want to put three more rules out there for you to consider. And the first one is this, that the harder you push, the harder the system pushes back. And it's not personal.
Right. I hate that. Like, I grew up in the Deep South, where work ethic was, you know, like one of the highest values. And so when there's a problem, you push. And if you didn't get what you wanted, you pushed harder. And you just, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I heard just push on through, you know?
Yeah. And But we all know from our experience, if we stop and think about it, that when somebody pushes on us, what do? We just automatically dig in and resist. Mm-hmm. Now, we may not resist outwardly. We may be very compliant and agreeable outwardly. But the more people try to change us, the more we will resist that change. And when we try to push on a system, when we try to push on the people in the system, they will just naturally resist and push back. And it's not personal to us. It's just the way systems work.
Yeah, I think if you could ever get that, it took me a long time. It took me a long time. But the word, the $64 word, is homeostasis. that we design systems, and then there, one of the rules of systems is that they are built for homeostasis, for balance. And you can take people and, you know, fire somebody, have somebody leave, have somebody retire and replace them, and the system is still going to work for homeostasis. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't change that, but it does mean that just pushing harder is only going to make the system tap into its homeostasis more deeply. And so when you can get that's not personal, that's just what a system does, then what that gives you access to is to say, oh, well, so I'm going to quit pushing so hard. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at these things we've been talking about, like everything is connected to everything else. There are underlying causes that we need to be talking about. There's connections that need to be made between various parts. And I think the homeostasis is the thing. When I see that kick in, it's like, oh, this is happening because I am not following some of the rules of systems.
Yeah, I think about if what we are doing is not actually pushing, but we're taking a principled stand that we have thought through, that we genuinely believe is a solution that can help us get to better results, then what we do is we stay the course. I have up on my whiteboard next to my desk, it says, stay calm, stay connected, stay the course. And that is not the same as pushing, right?
Right.
I mean, right. When we take a principled stand and we hold that stand and we stay the course, eventually the system will recalibrate itself. And the pushback will lessen and things will even out in a different place. It may not be exactly the place we were hoping for, but it will even out in a different place. If we can hold on to what we believe is best, take feedback from other parts of the system, stay the course, and not take it personally. But what we're often doing is pushing anxiously on, you know, some, we're anxiously focusing on trying to change something, usually something outside of ourselves. And whatever that thing is, it will just get worse. Whatever we focus on anxiously will get worse. Another thing we can do besides taking a principled stand is to get really curious about how the system itself will solve the problem. If it genuinely is a problem, the chances are good that the system will find a solution. And that it may or may not be the solution that we want, but that it will find, it will adapt, and it will find a solution. And so inviting people into finding solutions rather than pushing solutions on them, again, which is not the same thing as making principled decisions, but inviting people into solving problems together and not pushing on them, pushing solutions on them, is a way to live according to this rule. A second rule that we want to put out there is that systems are perfectly designed to get the results that they are getting. So tie that back to, for us, to the integrity conversation from last quarter.
Yeah, I think if you know, the folks at Aspen can really make that connection, it will be huge. In the integrity conversation, we used two definitions of integrity, and one of them was workability. And so, and then the other was that we give and keep our word to working the system the way that it's designed to work. And so when you're not getting the results that you want, there's two places to go that are high leverage places. One is to ask, am I doing what I said I would do when I said I would do it in the manner that it was meant to be done and the way that this system is asking me to, that my job description and our mission and our vision and our values calls us to. But one of the things to look at is there some redesign in the system that needs to be done? If the system is getting the results, is perfectly designed to get the results you're getting, then if you want different results, one of the things that you work on doing is changing the system.
That also involves, I think, accepting the reality that that is true, that we're not getting the results we're getting in spite of the system, but we're getting those results because of the system. Yeah. That the system is designed for these results.
So one of the things that I think we run into almost everywhere is that when there is a hierarchy in an organization and the parts of the hierarchy are not in pretty authentic relational connection, then there are breakdowns that occur in multiple places. And that system is perfectly designed to get the results that it's getting. Now, that doesn't mean you have to do away with the hierarchy. It may mean that what you need to do is make sure that the people at the very top of the organization and people who are at other places in the organization are hearing feedback from each other on a more regular basis, are developing relationships where they can talk about the real problems without everybody getting, you know, all stirred up and anxious and ending up in a shame or blame kind of conversation. So when we talk about the system's getting the results, it's designed to get the results that it's getting, that's just a simple illustration of how you could change the system and then get different kinds of results.
And so one thing I would say just as an aside is that our next podcast for this quarter is about feedback. And so we're going to dig into that further. And then also say that perfectly sets us up for the third rule of systems. Which is that to address system problems, we need to look at the parts and the relationship between the parts. And you said this earlier, you alluded to this, but I want to say it again. To address system problems, it is not enough just to look at the parts, and especially not just the parts I'm part of.
Which is what we usually do.
Right. But to be able to get to the balcony and see all the parts and then to see the relationship between the parts. I'm thinking about a video, and we can link to this in so that everybody can see it. But do you remember the video? I think it was called COG, and it was put out by Honda. And they took every part of a Honda Accord, I believe it was an Accord, took every single part down to the windshield wipers, even the liquids in the engine, took every single part, but they rearranged those parts so that you still had all the parts of a car, but you didn't actually have a car. You know, the parts could not function like a car. Mm-hmm. It's very entertaining, but it reminds us that the system is not just the parts. It's the parts and how those parts are connected to each other and how they are arranged.
One of the things that I see often in organizations, and I see it some in Aspen, is when a part does everything that they know how to do to make their part successful, strong, purpose-driven. I mean, really, like, they want to do what Aspen wants to do, but they don't look at the impact of their efforts on other parts in the system. And sometimes they will make advances for their own part at a cost to other parts of the system. And that's not workable over the long haul. And so you look at the parts, but you have to look at the relationship between the parts. And we've already done this. I mean, you can think about the parts as leadership, finance, marketing, sales, operations, design. You can think of it as studios, OLG, superintendents, support staff. There are multiple ways to think about what the parts are and what the connections of the parts. But if I'm in Aspen and I'm listening to this, a part of what I'm doing is thinking, so as I do my work, who in the system is impacted by my work, and what am I doing to communicate what I'm doing? What am I doing to build a relationship so that we can have the challenging conversations that just happen when people have different perspectives and different ways about going about things? And then I'm working on strengthening the connection of those parts.
And one way I know that at least a lot of folks at Aspen are familiar with is to think about the triangles. We'll talk about this more in the third quarter, but I often hear people say, you know, I'm not trying to triangulate, or I don't want to triangulate here.
Right.
And that's just an example, I think, of, okay, so if you can see a triangle, so in other words, a place where you've got a relationship between two people or two parts of the system that are kind of stabilizing themselves by looping in a third. If you can see that triangle, so for example, I think one really important triangle that we see a lot might be between a studio and ELT and design or cost modeling or, you know, some other part of the system. The studios are based on a triangle. You know, you've got three people doing three different kinds of work together. And so being able to see the relationships that we get into that look like triangles, and the trick there is staying in contact with all parts of the system without taking sides. That is just so incredibly hard to do. It's hard to stay in contact with all parts. Typically, if I'm in a triangle, there is one person or group in the triangle that I enjoy relating to, that feels good and natural to me. And then there is another angle on that triangle that maybe I'm frustrated with, or that I'm, you know, that something just, I'm just resisting. I don't want to be connected to them. It makes me uncomfortable or frustrated to be connected to them. And so the idea of staying connected, appropriately connected to all parts of the system, we just resist that so much. And then to do that without taking sides, right? To manage myself to stay curious, to think, okay, both of these people see different angles on this. You know, both of these people see things that the other one maybe doesn't see and that maybe I don't see. And to stay curious about that rather than jumping in and aligning myself with one side over the other side. For me, that phrase guides my behavior so much. Stay in touch with everyone and don't take sides.
I think it's really important to kind of bear down on that, because one of the things that I run into on a fairly regular basis, even still after the work we've done, is some kind of corporate, and I'm not talking about leadership team, I'm just talking about the culture of the company. There is kind of this belief that triangles are bad. That if the moment that I start trying to have a conversation about a second or third point in the triangle, that I'm doing something wrong. And I think what we want to say is that triangles exist, like gravity exists. And there's a way you can be in a triangle, and Trisha's been, you've been describing that, that's actually very fruitful and that helps you move forward. And there's a way you can be in a triangle that's very destructive.
Like and gossiping, right?
Gossiping, or like taking sides, or like, those two things in particular, rather than staying in contact with both other parts of the triangle, defining yourself, saying, you know, about whatever issue you're working on, what you think, what you see, what you believe, what you want to do, what you think the right solution is. And if other points of the triangle don't see it that way, listening, being curious, staying in connection. Triangles exist all over the company, all over every organization. They're never going to go away, so you ought to give that up. And what you ought to take on is, how do I manage myself in any triangle that I'm in a way that actually gives life to the company and to our goals and to the stuff we're trying to accomplish?
So, Aspen, it's always fun for us to get together and have a conversation. And we imagine that you're here with us, you know, listening in, and we can see your faces. And it's just a lot of fun for us to be with you. You've got two more podcasts coming this quarter. One is going to be on feedback, like we said, and the other will be on power dynamics, which is just a unique angle on the connections between the parts. And so those will be coming. For now, just know that we're here in Texas rooting for you. We think you're doing great work, and we love the time we spend with y'all.
See you soon. Thanks.